Oi, what's the best game where you get to eat pie? What's the best game where you play a dead guy? Aye?
You'll find out on VG247's podcast.
Here, what's the best game where you swing from a rope? And what's the best game where you battle the Pope?
Assassin's Creed 2.
Like I said, you will find out in this your podcast.
Hello and welcome to the VG247 Best Games Ever podcast, where we like to find the best game within a very specific category. For example, this week we're looking for the best game that's set in New York, inspired, obviously, by the recent release of Marvel Spider-Man 2 on PlayStation 5, and probably eventually PC, almost definitely. We've got Alex Donaldson and Connor Macker with us, podcast regulars. We've also got, in his podcast debut, Mark Warren. How you doing, man?
I'm doing perfectly well, Jim.
It's your second week at VG247, right?
Third week, although I'm losing track of time already, which is a good sign.
Third week, so that's like, yeah. So, I mean, I was going to call it, it's not a madhouse, is it? It's more sedate than that, but it's just sort of like a remotely kind of mad Slack channel that you log into every now and then, and we're mostly left to our own devices. It's a very chill place to work, actually.
We're quite unconventional, aren't we?
It is nice, though. It's like really lush, just like to tune in and see what people are talking about, you know?
Yeah.
We're
solely back. We don't even tell Connor to shut his wardrobe door when he starts recording the podcast. Just like, yeah,
What I'm amazed at is Connor's. I mean, I've said this before, but I feel like even more so this week. That's a very bright room, Connor. It doesn't look like you're broadcasting from, you know, a cave.
Yeah, you know, we're on the up and up. There's a real story arc with like the sort of anime game arc, and then the police knocking down the door. Fans will remember that. Ending to a podcast. And then we had the witness protection camera and lighting rig. And now we're on the up and up. It's going really well. Positive. But the wardrobe stays open. I think I closed like all the drawers and the shelves and everything one day, and someone was like, shite podcast, isn't it, Connor?
Is that what you sort of, what you tell dates when you bring dates home, the wardrobe stays open?
Mate, I've not bought a date home in like 5 years.
Nice. Okay, so moving swiftly on from that, we've got James Billcliffe on the podcast later as well. In a first for this show, What am I talking about? We've done this loads of times, but a pre-recorded segment because he is actually in New York at the moment. If you're watching on YouTube or whatever, you'll be able to see it. He's taken little clips of him. He couldn't quite bring himself to do a piece to camera in Times Square, so there's just a clip of him smiling in Times Square.
He would not have looked out of place. That Times Square is always full of tourists and nutters.
Surely it's like Vlogger Central, right? Everyone's cutting about with a selfie stick. They're doing little like Instagram pieces to camera about their latest sandwich or whatever. But but God bless him. He's done a great job. So we'll cut to that later. Okay, right. First of all, what is the best game in New York? Donaldson, what have you got for us? I think your pick, I think everyone's going to have been able to guess this straight away.
It's come up on the podcast before, right? I think this is a funny one, this topic, because a lot of people have a really great affinity for New York as a city. For me, I'm not one of those people for American cities. For me, it's Chicago, Seattle, LA, Vegas, of course. That I have a closer affinity for. I have been a couple of times, not for years though. God, I went for the PlayStation 4 Pro reveal. How long ago was that?
Oh,
how ancient am I now?
2016, 2015.
Yeah, like they used to have a theater that they sponsored on Broadway, so it was the PlayStation Theater.
Yeah,
and that was where they did the reveal. And I just remember being with Rich from Digital Foundry. Our glorious sibling publication, and Rich being so excited, obviously as a techie person, and I was excited, but it made me realise that I'm not as much of a techie person as I thought I was. Sitting next to Rich for an event like that. So I don't have that much of an affinity, but there could only be one choice really for me, and so that is Def Jam Fight for New York. New York's in the name. It's a great game. If you don't know what Def Jam, what those Def Jam games are, they're literally 3D fighting games, a cross between like Tekken and the old WWE games when those games used to be really good. In fact, those games were made by the guys who made WWF No Mercy and WrestleMania. On the specifically, I think they did the Nintendo versions. They did like the N64 versions, which I always remember. Maybe this is wrong. I just remember No Mercy at that time being so much better than what was on PS1, which I guess would have been SmackDown versus Raw or something around that time. It was just awesome.
No, I remember that. I remember a lot of people were... Yeah, the N64 game was the one,
And basically, that's the lineage, because they did WCW and other wrestling games on the PlayStation. Then they did the WCW games for the N64. Yeah. Then they moved on to the WWF games for the N64, WWE as it is now. And then they did No Mercy, which I think is just one of those all-time classics. No Mercy is probably on the shelf behind me, which is how you can tell it's an all-timer. Because I only put the bangers on the shelf. All the other games are in the loft, genuinely. So they did No Mercy in 2000, and then they did the first Def Jam game in 2003, and then Five in New York followed a year later. So it's like a wrestling fighting game. It's not entirely wrestling, I wouldn't say, but you can see the lineage from No Mercy, but there's also a Tekken sort of edge because the various fighting styles that characters have, some of them are kickboxers, some of them are more traditional martial artists, some of them are just like street brawlers, but then you do also have characters that straight up have wrestling moves and wrestling submissions and stuff, some of which are probably straight up taken from their work on No Mercy. And it's a game that just features a bunch of rappers. Snoop Dogg's in it, Method Man's in it, you know, Exhibit, Ice-T, Mobb Deep, Ludacris, Busta Rhymes, Ghostface
Killah.
This
is definitely the only game that's got Snoop Dogg and Busta Rhymes in it.
Snoop's in a lot of games, right?
Snoop gets around.
But Warren G's in it, rest in peace. Is Warren G dead? I can't think. Is Warren G dead? I'm sure he's dead.
It is an American rapper, not was. So it looks like he's still alive.
Oh.
That's good news.
He's not dead. Yeah. He's just 52, which is close.
Well, in rapper terms, that is there pretty much.
Yeah. Stay strong, Warren. Hang in there.
It's got Flavor Flav in it. God, like.
It does.
Period when Flavor Flav was probably right around then, he had that terrible reality TV show that was basically like The Bachelor, but it was girls vying for a chance to date Flavor Flav. And I remember at the end of every episode, because Flavor Flav's thing was he used to wear a giant clock around his neck. The end of every episode, he would give clocks to all the girls that were going on to the next week, and the one that didn't, that was going home, didn't get a clock. Which is brutal, really. And girls would be in floods of tears because they didn't get a clock. Def Jam 5 in New York, it's just a really good, really fun fighting game. I've got really, really strong and happy memories of playing this with mates and it being one of those games that you would be screaming out loud at each other. And then in addition to that, obviously, it's sort of funny because they did absolutely create this bizarre Def Jam universe where they did three games... Aki did three games, and then EA did a reboot on the 360 that was not very good. Like, those games have an ongoing narrative, you know, the story from one picks up in the other, and it's all who's been arrested and who's in, and you know, of the few women in the game, who's dating who and all this. That was also a big thing in this game, was that I'm pretty sure the first one didn't have any female fighters, and that I recall them in magazines just making a huge deal out of the fact that we've got Little Kim, and I can't remember any of the other women. Little Kim was definitely, well, you know, in rap in those days there weren't very many.
But of the ones in
Def Jam, Lil Kim was definitely the most famous, by a million miles. And some of the characters, some of these guys are playing themselves, some of these guys are playing characters. It's so weird and so wonderful. And then also it's sort of got good soundtrack.
I mean, great soundtrack, obviously. I think the last time this came up, we talked about how there's a real crossover a real kind of cross discipline between like the theatricality of wrestling and like the theatricality of rapping, right? And everyone's putting on a bit of a front. It's all very, a lot of the feuds and stuff in rap are exaggerated or outright manufactured in similar way to wrestling. I mean, a lot of them are real and people get shot, don't get me wrong, but like there's a similar kind of kayfabe to it, and you can see how those things massively cross over. Like Snoop Dogg would have been a great wrestler, I'm absolutely sure. I mean, he might have even been one, probably.
I'm sure in that era when Vince was bringing on anyone and everyone,
Trump
was on and all that sort of stuff, I would be astonished if in that period Snoop hadn't had some sort of guest appearance and taken a bump or two in the WWE. I bet if like you YouTube that comes up straight away.
But I
just love it. It's a really good, obviously it's a funny old game because a lot of the characters are like the Def Jam roster, because that was how it was, Def Jam record label. So there's a lot of guys in there that aren't as well known, but that's then mixed in with a lot of guys who are really, really famous. And like some weird one, Danny Trejo's in it.
Yeah.
that's just come back to me. I'm trying to think now, because because when I said about Warren G, it was Nate Dogg I was thinking of, because I was thinking of Regulate. And Nate Dogg is a weird one because he's not actually in the game, and that's a bummer. And he sadly has passed away.
So I have to interject here, right? Snoop Dogg is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Yeah.
There you go.
The first thing that comes up if you Google Snoop Dogg WWE, Snoop Dogg delivers a people's elbow to The Miz. I mean, yeah, there we go. He is a wrestler, so perfect. Fucking hell.
That is a great thumbnail on that video as well.
We just imagined it, and it was reality.
The thing about Snoop is, in fairness to him, he doesn't say no to anything.
No.
And it's not even in a sellout sort of way. I really respect the way he is about it.
It's a backhanded compliment, but
I really respect the way he is about it, because some people are quite pretentious about it, but he basically will just do anything he thinks is fun. And also he's a big gamer as well, right? Game stuff, in a lot of cases, he's chosen to do because he really does give a shit. I met him at E3when he was in Tekken, and he was great, and he was really excited to be in Tekken, and he just he really just goes for it, and he doesn't, you know, he'll do anything. I think my favorite Snoop related gaming thing is like when Xbox Live went down and he was on his Instagram story or whatever ranting, going, Bill Gates, you gotta fucking sort this out.
I would like to jump in and say that my favorite moment is when Snoop Dogg was streaming on Twitch and his stream was muted for a full week. And his viewers tried to tell him that they couldn't hit that. We couldn't hear what he was saying. He just didn't even look. He was just playing video games. He's so into it.
You know, also, I bet it was entertaining just watching him enjoy himself in silence.
He's an incredibly entertaining guy. And I'd like to jump in. This is probably shooting my chances in the foot a little bit, but I'd be beside myself if I didn't mention it. Fight for New York with Snoop Dogg as Crow has one of the hypest final fights in the story.
Yes,
so I loved it. I loved it when I was a kid, because you basically, and it's hard. It's a hard, hard fight, but you can throw Snoop Dogg out a window, but he can throw you out a window, and the window has like a break. Like you've got to be thrown into it like three times for it to break.
Yeah.
So there's a tense moment where you're trying to like, and he's busted. He's like super, super, super strong. You just like getting lobbed out of windows for like 30 minutes.
Really, game that needs to come back. To be honest, they did that 361. And that was not very good. EA made that in-house, and the mechanic was like, it was like a fighting, it was an interesting idea, where the concept was, what if a fighting game and a rhythm game came together? This was the Guitar Hero era. So it was like you had to time your punches and stuff to the beats, and I'm pretty sure they got people like Dre and stuff to come in and do, maybe not Dre, because they probably couldn't afford Dre. Only Rockstar can afford Dre and put him in GTA Online DLC. But they did that reboot and that wasn't very good. And then, of course, they did another one of my favorite games of all time. They did the karaoke game. Konami made it on the 360, where it was just like SingStar, but for rap songs. And that's the and that's the Def Jam. And that was actually really cool, because one thing they did that was really interesting there is massive tangent just about Def Jam games in general, but they did loads of regional songs. So in the UK version, they had loads of UK rappers, so that, you know, they had loads of guys from the UK scene that wasn't, you know, so they had Tiny Temper and stuff like that. So that was really cool.
It needs to come back. It needs to come. People love it.
It, I mean, never it's come up will, with
it.
Sadly.
I'm sure Fight for NY has won this podcast at least once. It's definitely come up about 7 times.
I don't know if I've ever entered it, but I've definitely talked about it before.
Connor's entered it. I've entered it. Can I reveal as well that Connor originally picked this? And and I was like, I'm sorry, Donaldson's already claimed it. He's like, Donaldson. So we better move on, because we've now done 18 minutes on Def Jam games.
Well, as you should. As you should. Pay respect.
Yeah. Although, you know, I'm sure nobody minds. All right, Mark, what have you got for us? What is the best game set in New York? You can get an extra point if you do it in a New York accent. I'm only kidding.
Right, I'm not going to try that, but what I'm going to do first is deliver what's going to sound like the most rehearsed line that you've ever heard. James Billcliffe may not be in Times Square, but in the run-up to the release of Midnight Club Street Racing, you bet your bottom dollar Rockstar was. They literally cordoned off sections of Times Square to shoot the shot for the cover of it, which is very interesting, because when I and about 9 million other people looked at it, you look at it and you think, oh no, that's CG, they haven't actually taken a photo. So they spent all this money to take a photo of two tricked out cars driving through Times Square to promote this new franchise that they're doing, this new Street Racing franchise. And yeah, people just think it's CG. But yes, Midnight Club Street Racing, as I said, set in New York, at least for the first bit. It does go to London towards the end, which I'm hoping would disqualify me for reasons I'll outline. Yes, starts off in New York. You begin as a New York taxi driver, the most New York of men. You start off racing your taxi against street racers, members of this Midnight Club, and basically it's the what would come to be the Midnight Club formula, which is going around an open world map, challenging street racers, winning their cars via pink slips, and gradually just becoming king of the whole scene. It's not the first game to do like an open world where the races are just within that, because I think Turbo Esprit was the first one back in like the 80s, but it's interesting to go back and play because it's basically the formula that would eventually morph into GTA Online's races, which are checkpoints within an open world, which is annoying because they stopped doing Midnight Club games because basically they amalgamated that into GTA Online, which
that's why
sucks.
They won't make another one.
But yes, it basically became the building blocks upon which that was built. And it actually has a link to Def Jam as well, because when you drive through Times Square in the game, there are Def Jam recording sounds. So it's...
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's very, very New York.
I've got Midnight Club LA. Got that on 360. I love that. And I love how, like, in a lot of ways, I mean, it's obviously a lot more faithful, but it's a much more kind of visceral kind of recreation of LA than even, like, GTA 5 is. Mm. And it's incredible to race around. I was playing, Midnight Club 2 Dub Edition on, so got a fat PS3 here, and I had it set up for a while just to play kind of PS2 games on and stuff, and it playing Dub Edition, and I'd taken like 3 attempts to finish one of the events, and then it got a yellow light of death, and I'm still devastated about it. And it's like those things are like gold dust, like the PS3s that can play PS2 games. So what I'm getting at is this is a difficult topic for me, Mark,
because it's checkpoint based and you've got to pick the right route through these urban environments. It's basically about learning the roads. The first time you do a race, unless you've done it before, you will fail because you'll just be learning the best route. So yeah, basically, the first one is about a New York taxi driver eventually proving that he knows the roads of London better than the residents of London, which is a taxi driver's dream, is it not? Proving that you know the roads of London, a city famous for its cabbies, better than these terrible English people.
It's funny because you say that the taxi driver, the most New York of men, and it's like, and in London, probably the most London of men as well is the cabbie. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
it's built around the world's foremost taxi rivalry is what this game is. It's about a feud that's gone back years.
Yeah,
and when I first played it, I figured that it would have come out after the original Fast and Furious, because obviously after that came out in, I think it was 2001, you got the couple of Need for Speed Undergrounds, which basically parlayed that into, we are the video game representation of this, you get a licensed car, you can customize it. The first two Midnight Clubs, interestingly, don't have either licensed cars or customization, but I think it might have been the case of some people having the same idea at the same time. Because Fast and Furious was inspired by an article about New York street racing called Racer X. And since this is set in New York, I'm thinking that there's got to have been a little bit of cross-pollination there, even if I can't find concrete proof that it is inspired by that. And obviously it takes its name from a Japanese street racing club that I think were on of Tokyo expressways and that kind of thing. But yes, it's an interesting kind of two people doing the same thing at the same time.
It's definitely a moment in time. Like, you had Gone in 60 Seconds coming out around the same time as the first Fast and Furious film, right? So there was a whole kind of, there was a bit of a wellspring of like people getting into this mad representation of street racer culture. And obviously, with the Fast and Furious, like by the end of it, they're basically like Terminator films, right?
About 3-4 films in, they sort of finished with the street racing thing and became about family.
Did they not like pivot to full on sci-fi at one point? But like the Midnight Club stuff. It's an interesting look at a version of Rockstar that I miss, actually, that was still like doing stuff that wasn't GTA Online. Still, like, this is the same Rockstar that like came out with a like an incredible ping pong game completely randomly GTA 4 came along, right? Like, if you look at their catalog and go back through their kind of like their release schedule, it's like, you know, like the fat end of the wedge is kind of like the late 90s, early 2000s, and now it's just like it just kind of contracts and contracts and contracts, and now it's like GTA Online and that's it, and every now and then
Smugglers Run, man.
I think one of the cars from Smugglers Run is actually an Easter egg or something.
Yeah, it
in
probably is.
This.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I think they're going to just become a free franchise studio, aren't they? It's going to be GTA and Red Dead, and I think probably a new IP. I think we'll get GTA 6 and then we'll get something new, and then we'll get Red Dead 3. 4, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah, Red Dead 3 goes even further back in time. Just as an aside, the best bit in any of the Red Dead games, any of the three, is Arthur Morgan having a bath.
Arthur Morgan having a bath after he's thrown a Molotov cocktail in the same room, and the room is gradually being consumed by flames as he's in the bath.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that in the first game, the multiplayer, you can play as a man in a barrel. And when you select him on the character select screen, he just like goes, "I'm a man in a barrel." That always appealed to me.
You know, we'll never see the like of that wit again now that all the best writers have gone. All right. Okay. Now, before we move on to Connor, I think it's only fair to feature James Billcliffe's report that's come straight from New York. He's there at the moment. This was quite an operation, actually, because he shot it and recorded the VO and everything and sent it to Izzy, his wife, to edit it. So like props to her. Thank you so much for getting this over.
Hi, James. Hi, everyone. Sorry I couldn't be there for the Best Game Set in New York podcast. As you can see, I'm currently in the real-life New York City, where I'm starring as Rumpelteazer in the latest Broadway run of Cats. If I was there in person, I'd try and spin some argument about how the Mushroom Kingdom is canonically accessed through a manhole cover in Brooklyn, but since I actually want to win, I've chosen a game that's perfect for the spooky season and encapsulates the urban, blue-collar spirit of the city better than anything else. Ghostbusters the video game. Written by Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd and starring all four original Ghostbusters, I think it's a must-play given how reluctant they were to reprise their roles on screen. So not only is it a great game, but it's an iconic slice of Manhattan you can't get anywhere else. Script ends. No, wait.
Look!
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
He's right. It is like an possibly, like, yeah, a slice of Manhattan that you can't get anywhere else. Ghostbusters, quintessentially, like, the New York film, probably more so than Taxi Driver or anything else, I
you
imagine.
You know, though.
But it's shot in L.A., isn't it?
Is that also, what you were going to say? No, I was going to say, if we're talking about the New York film, I very nearly picked either one, really, of the Godfather games.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because that second one in particular, the 360 era one, is really good. They were both on 360, but the one that was developed as a 360 era exclusive, which I guess was the Godfather 2 game, was genuinely really, really good. Like, that was the golden age of GTA clones, right? I also think James's point at the start is quite interesting, because I wrestled with this a bit before I made my choice, because there's a big difference between games that are set in New York versus games where New York appears.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of really good games. Like, for me, if I think New York video game, I think of only one thing, even before I think of Def Jam, and that is Soviet paratroopers coming down around the Statue of Liberty in Red Alert 2. because that's one of the most iconic in video game introductions of all time.
But
it's just a couple of missions, and that's it. And I think there's a lot of that. Like, there's New York's in Deus Ex, right? And also, before Connor does his pick, I have to say we have to give credit. We have to give Tom his dues, because he's not here, and say it's very unfair that he is on holiday and watching the Trolls film and such delights for one topic where he genuinely could have submitted Project Gotham Racing.
Yeah. He submitted that for, there was an Edinburgh connection that he has submitted that for, which, you know, didn't sit well with me, frankly. He is missing out on a topic that he could genuinely have gotten away with. But let's move on to someone who is here. Connor, what have you picked?
You know, I was distraught last night when Def Jam was stolen from me. It took me to a really sort of dark place.
And now you know how Kelsey feels.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot more sympathy now for that situation. Yeah. It took me to a dark place, really. I had to sit down. I had to, like, think about what was going on, you know, why I'd come to in my life. But then something awoke in me. And I was blessed with the actual best answer, because I feel like Alex, you know, and Mark have gone near to where sort of what New York is about. But really, when we think of New York, we think of, you know, Italian Americans, you know, pizza, pasta, that sort of thing. And there's no better game to capture the, you know, Italian American experience than The Darkness 2. The Darkness 2 is fantastic. It's made by Digital Extremes when they were doing, like, mercenary work before they kind of, like, made Warframe and at the start of, like, the live service free-to-play stuff. And it is obviously a adaptation to the, I think they're kind of mid. They sadly never really ended the way they wanted to do comics, and obviously the sequel to The Darkness 1, where, you know, you fill the shoes of Jackie Estacado. The game kicks off with you walking into a restaurant where a bunch of made men, like mobsters and just people, you know, from your extended family are at, including, and there's some really killer lines here that I had to take notes of, because it's fantastic. Hey, Joey, I got you those tickets for the game. This ravioli is too spicy. I can't taste the flavor. You know,
iconic
you know, New York cultural landmarks. And then, like, in the first 15-20 minutes, you obviously go through the Italian restaurant. You're of course assaulted by, I believe, like, cultish fanatics or whatever, as they try and take your powers away from you. You go through the subway, you go through the streets of New York, you pull the doors off taxis and throw them through people. which, I mean, I don't know about racing games, but I don't think you can do that in those. You wishbone people. I forgot that's like the first thing they let you do in that game.
Yeah.
Is you like bust out of the restaurant and you grab some guy of your weird sort of like evil tentacle like darkness powers and you just rip him in half. It's crazy. It's nuts. Like the peak New York experience really is that.
Yeah. It's just like, I mean, one of the first things you do in that game.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the first things you do in that game is you just start impaling those Italian mobsters with pool cues.
And spikes. I'm so glad you mentioned that because I played through the game a little bit last night in like sort of my anger and my sadness. and I turned it off because on the second level, you run into a guy called Jimmy the Grape. He's just an Italian sort of mobster guy in a full purple suit, you know. It's fantastic. The Darkness 2 is brilliant. And the fact that we didn't get a third one is very, very sad.
It's actually
I sort of prefer the first one, you know.
Really? Why is that?
I don't know. There's just sort of a vibe and a feel of that first one. I haven't played either of them in ages, though, so maybe that's a folly. But, yeah, I sort of, in my mind, but this was, I have to admit, I don't think it's as good a choice as Def Jam, but this was on my list. It was probably the second serious game on my list, and then I had some silly games like Die Hard Trilogy and things like that.
I think the Darkness 2 kind of like, I think gameplay wise is a lot more fun. It has like the throwing stuff that Jim mentioned, which I think, I mean, the game is basically just got like a gory action fest, right? I think you could argue that the story in the first one is a bit more like, it's more like to the point, but I think it's less interesting than the second one. The second one obviously has the bit where you're kind of, you get blown up in a restaurant or shot in the head and like you're taken to like an asylum.
The second one doesn't have that fucking World War One bit though, so it's got that going for it.
It does have
that
going for it.
That is true, because that was wretched. You can't watch To Kill a Mockingbird in the second one, though, so...
Exactly. All of these reasons, is why I think The Darkness 2 deserves to win this. It is amazing, and while I'm glad Digital Extremes went on to make a bunch of money selling, like, Space Ninja outfits to people, I do kind of wish we got that third game.
It's like, funny at this time, right? Because I feel like The Darkness and Alan Wake are sort of bedfellows, and Alan Wake is kind of back. In terms of when they came out and what they were doing and all that sort of stuff and the size of the studio, and obviously Remedy sort of stuck to their guns and probably had quite a hard time of it as a result in terms of keeping the company together. And they had to go from deal to deal. And Digital Extremes obviously went the other way and made mega, mega bucks, but are probably never going to make a game that's as heartfelt as that again. So,
For sure. And also there's the thing of the IP. Obviously Remedy, you know, Sam Lake, you know, that's his baby, right? Alan Wake. He's been set on that and wants to make it. The Darkness comics, God, like, I mean, they didn't even properly finish the original run. And then they tried to reboot it, and then that apparently was okay. But, like, that was also, like, years and years ago. So, like, I think that is firmly, firmly dead. Means that, you know, Jackie has been left in hell forever.
The Darkness has Netflix series written all over it at some point in the future. That's exactly the sort of shit. When they're done with Sandman and stuff like that, it's exactly the sort of thing where
to make it really authentic, they should just have a bit where Jackie watches To Kill a Mockingbird and it's just the whole 2 hours.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing where I want to email the writer and be like, can you just tell me what was going to happen in the Darkness 3? Because it's been like 10 years.
Tell
me what's going to happen. Let me write it up.
That's what everyone just wants Yu Suzuki to do with Shenmue. Like, it's over now, mate. Yeah. Just tell me what's
going to happen.
Just finish it in one single graphic novel. Just give us the bullet points.
But you know if you do that, the guy's going to be like, oh, God, I don't know, man. That was like 10 years ago.
No. Shenmue was envisioned as like 17 chapters.
No, Shenmue's different. Shenmue's a whole different monster. Shenmue's a monster, right? That obviously is like a whole thing.
He probably doesn't actually know.
Darkness is probably like, I don't know, Jackie escapes and he kills the angel maiden guys.
I love those two Darkness games. I love how they, I kind of like how they complement each other, how the first one is an origin story and it's really naturalistic, and it's got, it had like a high degree of interactivity with the world for its time, for a shooter of its time as well. You got that bit, you got bits of that game where you're just hanging out in a subway for a while, you know, and nothing's actually happening. Really like brave choices that are just about the world building and just about like putting you in New York. Exactly. And then the Darkness 2 has a bit of that, but it changes the art style to be more comic booky, and obviously, and at this point Jackie is now established as the comic book character, and so the art style reflects that, and it's like, it's just like really amazing creative choices that could have gone bad, but they managed to pull them off. And the combat's amazing in the second game, and they are quintessentially New York. It's now time for me to pick something. So here's the, I've got a theme tune. I think I ate it more than all you do, to be honest now.
No, I don't think you do. I don't think that's true.
No, I do. I do. But it's only here by popular demand. Every week we get a comment that's like, you better do the gym theme. I'm just sitting down to watch it. I'm like, oh. It's like, you know, you've dug yourself a hole. Anyway. Right. Also, RIP, because we didn't get the Tom child pooing in a Lidl story this week, but I'm sure it'll be back next week. All right. Okay. So we're looking at quintessentially New York games. We got the original Midnight Club. We've got the Darkness 2. Can I just ask Connor quickly, why did you choose the Darkness 2 over the Darkness?
I think it fits in like a fond part of my brain growing up. There was a sweet like span of like a few years where the Darkness 2, Alan Wake, as Alex mentioned, Army of Two for some reason is also in there. It's like a game I played when I was like at school and kind of fucked with a lot.
360.
This is fucking me up because these are games that I reviewed as well. Yeah. The idea that you were at school.
Yeah, Connor was, like 11.
I remember going to school and being like, guys, take my word for it, you probably shouldn't buy Two Human. Because that was also a game I bought when I was at school. And it's like, we would do that. We would go in and be like, oh, do you want to play Army of Two? And they were like, I guess. Yeah.
Currently like, freely downloadable on Xbox.
Everyone. I gave Two Human a 3 out of 10. And then someone on the development team sent me an email that was a massive abusive screed.
That game was also meant to be like a first time trilogy, that's
happened,
right?
It has happened since.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
My one of those was, it wasn't from the developer, but it was from a couple of people. And one of them was like a full 10 years after the fact. I gave Bound by Flame 2 out of 10 on Video Gamer. And I called it a disgrace on all fronts. It was fucking terrible. Wow. Those guys went on to make Greedfall, right? Which is actually like, you know, really good. You know, so they obviously got better. And, you know, I'm not saying I had a part in that. Maybe they butt their ideas up because of that 2 out of 10. But a full 10 years later, somebody did a YouTube documentary about, it was called The Rise and Fall of Video Gamer TV, right? Mm. And in the comments for that, there's a guy like really kicking off about this 2 out of 10 that I gave Bound by Flame like 10 years earlier. And I'd forgotten by that point. And everyone's like, what are you on about, man? Shut up. And he's like, Jim Trinker should never have even been given a job in the industry.
there's genuinely probably a podcast just in stories about stuff like that. I think my ultimate one, and I could probably go back and find all the comments, was I gave the 360 version of Final Fantasy 13 one point less than the PlayStation 3 version because the performance was that much worse.
Oh no.
And you would have thought that I had, you know, I don't know. That was the worst abuse I've ever experienced in this job. People were going bonkers.
People console warring is just like, people. I mean, it's pathetic anyway, but it inspires so much vitriol. It's ridiculous.
I've had it in my mentions this week because I tweeted about the Sony, the new PlayStation removable disc drive requiring the internet to authenticate the disc drive the first time you connect
it.
And I said, I remember when Sony was like laughing at Microsoft for a requirement like this. And I had people going, this is a requirement of the DMCA. And they even put a Twitter community note. And people going, it's only once, what's your problem? And just like, don't you understand that once is one time too many? If you work on a nuclear submarine, you're fucked. Which is a fringe case, but that's not the point.
No, it's like, well, John Linneman was saying that the point is that if the authentication servers stop existing, that hardware is now useless.
Yeah.
Because you'll never be able to set it up again.
The nuclear submarine example is extreme, but I'm pretty sure that was exactly the question that was asked to Don Matrick with the original Xbox One plans.
Yeah.
Where Don Matrick, someone asked him a hypothetical situation, and I'm pretty sure the case was a military person who's serving in a situation where there is no internet connection. And that was when Don Matrick famously said, we have a product for customers like that. It's called the Xbox 360. One of the worst responses of all time. One of the worst responses of all time. And that should go down in history.
How to tank your own brand.
I thought the console wars were dead and they've kind of kicked off recently. Is that just me?
I think that kind of rhetoric really calmed down for a long time. And generally people were like, well, that's just silly. We used to do that when we were kids and everything. And now there's like a whole new sort of swathe. And it's not Wayne's. It's people in their fucking 30s on Twitter.
who've never let it die, made
being into PlayStation or Xbox their entire personality. And it's just this.
It's silly, especially since when you consider the PS5 is just better.
Well, it's especially mad because like this is the worst console generation in living memory, and like there's nothing. What is there to actually attach your banner to? But anyway, we're getting off topic. So we've got Def Jam 2, we've got the original Midnight Club, we've got Def Jam Fight for NY. Did I call Def Jam 2 The Darkness 2, Def Jam Fight for NY, and we've got the Ghostbusters video game, which we've got a remastered re-release, I think, on PS4, etc. Not that long ago, after coming out in the 360, etc. Way ages ago. And it is interesting that was the first kind of Ghostbusters project, relatively modern one, to bring the original cast out of retirement almost. They got Bill Murray. Everyone's heard those stories about how he just has like an answer phone that he rarely checks, and if you want him to be in your film, you have to pitch it to him on the answer phone, and whether or not he even like listens to it within a year is up in the air. And my original pitch for this episode was that everyone had to do it while putting on a New York accent, and that obviously didn't pan out.
No, I'm from Birmingham.
I was hoping people would be like, what am I, chap liver? But
why is this episode so long?
Brilliant.
I don't know, it's like the longest one we've ever done. Fuck it. I've got to pick something, and I'm going to upset everyone apart from Connor by picking The Darkness 2.
That's unexpected.
Commiserations to everyone.
I mean, great, really sorry. Awesome.
I thought I had that in the bag.
I just think it's like, especially when you pointed out, Connor, that The Darkness 2 and the original Darkness is full of Italian-American stereotypes, and I do really heavily associate that with New York because of, you know, Martin Scorsese mainly. I think it's like, if you're talking about experiences that are like, this is a very heavy, quintessentially New York vibe, that really nails the atmosphere, etc., of not the real place. I mean, I've never been to the real place, but New York as a cultural meme, as a cultural institution. The Darkness 2 really nails that. You could call it like, this is the comic book New York. This is the New York that everyone knows from films and TV shows and comics and stuff like that. And it's just a real kind of slice through that exact thing. So I think The Darkness 2 is a really great pick. I think everyone had a really great pick, but that And you know what? It was for me by the end, I was thinking and thinking and thinking. And for me by the end, it was a toss up between Bill Cliff and Connor. And I thought, well, I can't give it to Bill Cliff because he's not even here.
Exactly. Good call.
So, yeah, I'm only kidding. Right. Thanks, everyone, for turning up.
Yeah, okay.
No and I'm sure like Donaldson's raging now, you can tell.
I'm deeply upset. I'm also thinking about other cities that aren't New York. I'm still on that. Obviously Mario Odyssey's got one as well, hasn't it?
So should we just do the London episode next week? We'll do the same episode but London.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll dominate the same game.
Incredible. All right, okay, thank you so much for listening, and do leave us a 5-star review. I mean, this is an extra special long podcast. We deserve 5 stars for the effort we've put into this. We've all got stuff to do. Right, okay, thanks very much, guys. Speeches later.
Bye.
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 Bye.